this is Queen Jane. What it do? It's that time for a fabulous West Side Wednesday vibe on the G Lou Show. Sit back and enjoy the view where they doing it at.
Okay. Let's get this party started. Welcome to the G Lou Show. West Side Wednesdays.
You to die to death like ass chamber. Can man say it's harder to take a life for a life? The only real judge is the Almighty Christ. A woman who loves you, she thinks about your life. Hurt and worse, you visitation right. Sitting home pregnant, considering the options, drifting between abortion or death. The distortion of abortion is a devil strategy created by the economic uncertainty. Lawmakers among her, lawbreakers in hunger. You struggle for power, we all feel the thunder. Terrorism, cynicism, communism, suicide, atheism, altruism, brutalism, homicide. Heaven knows it can't go on. Too many things are going wrong. Who will save us from ourselves? This is what's going to hell. Bad times, these are for real. Bad times is what you and I feel.
Okay. Welcome to West Side Wednesday to G Lou Show. I am G Lou, assisted by the lovely, beautiful Queen, Miss Queen Jean. What up, Queen?
Hey, G Lou, how you doing?
I'm doing all right. Trying to get a late start. I'm kind of discombobulated, but I'm good. Blessed and ready for success tonight. I want to say before we start, prayers up to you and your family, for the stuff going on. I heard about earlier. So first and foremost, we want to say prayers to Queen Jean and her family.
Oh, thank you, G. Lou. We truly appreciate that. Truly we do. Thank you so much. Because that's all we have now is to go on prayers. So thank you. I appreciate it. I will let the family know as well. So thank you so much.
Yes. All right. I want you to tell them what we got going on tonight, Queen.
Well, tonight we have lead DJ Flash. Wow, he has so many accolades under his belt. His resume is like off the charts. He comes from the late 80s, the early 70s to the 80s. I'm not going to give up too much information on him because I want him to come on here and have a conversation with us. But what I did find out that we have in common that our birth date is in the same month and we both are the same astrology sign. So that's pretty dope right there. But that's what we got going on tonight. We have indeed DJ Flash. There's a lot of DJ Flashes out there, but let's not get it twisted. He is the legendary and the original DJ Flash.
The original. The first white boy to ever put it down on wax. You know what I'm saying? Man, y'all better give it up for DJ Flash, man. We got a legend on here tonight, man. Now he's even took it a bit further. And he's the owner now of Mecola Records, and there's so much history behind Mecola Records as well. That's another originator of this stuff, really, on the West Coast. So we got so much to talk about. Also, I want to show... give props to Flash, because I'm telling you what, he already got the phone lines lit. I mean lit up.
Wow.
So shout out to everybody tuning in wherever you are. I see numbers everywhere. So thank you to everybody tuning in tonight. I know it's for the legend. It ain't me or Queen. Well, Queen got fans, but it ain't for me. But we got the legend tonight, and I see all the callers. Give me a few minutes before I go to these callers. Let me bring in our special guest. Go ahead and introduce him, Queen, because he is here and he's ready.
Okay, well, let's welcome lead DJ Flash from Fresno, California, by the way of Sacramento, California. Welcome to the show.
Hello?
DJ Flash. Hello.
Man,
DJ
G. Lou.
DJ
G. Lou and J.G.
What's happening?
Hey, you know what? It's an honor. It's an honor to be on your show. You know, I'm humbled. And, I, to tell you the truth, this is my first radio interview. I usually avoid them. And I don't know why, but when I tuned in to MC Fosty last week, I said, you know what? I like the vibe. I like the vibe G. Lou and Queen Jean are putting out. And you know, since we're writing a book, getting ready for a book, I'm sure I'm going to have to do more radio shows and interviews.
Right.
So anyway, it's just my honor to be here, and thank you very much.
This is an honor. It's the first, right? It's the first. We got to give. Wow. Okay.
It's the first.
Okay.
It's the first.
Thank you, sir. We're honored as well. Yes, we're honored as well. Shout out to DJ Flash. Sometimes imitated, never duplicated. Flash, before. Oh, go ahead, sir. Go ahead.
No, I'm saying you have my full cooperation. Whatever you want to ask me, whatever I add to it, you know, about the history of West Coast rap, then, you know, that's what I'm here for.
Okay, we're going to get into it because I got a whole lot to – we got a lot to talk about the cover. I mean, from the beginning all the way up to, you know, what you got going on now, even with McCola. I want to just know a lot about that. But before we get started, let me – if you don't mind, we got a lot of callers. I'm going to take a couple of these callers just to try to get that out the way before we get started because if not, I'll have them on hold because we're going to talk about it, a lot of stuff. So let me go to a few callers, see what they want to say right quick before we get started. So I'm going to go to the phone line.
Okay.
Let me see. 530, you're live on the line, 922.
Hello? Can you hear me?
Hello, good evening. Yes, sir.
Hello?
Yes, sir.
Hey,
what's up? How you doing, G-Lou? Queen Jean?
Doing
DJ
good,
Flash?
Man.
We're doing fine.
Who got on the line?
Hello. Hey, this is Kyle Wild out of Oroville.
That sounds familiar. Okay, Kyle.
Wow.
What's going on, man? What's going on?
Hey, just want to talk to legendary DJ Flash for a second.
You know,
it's not every day you get to talk to a legend. I had a few questions about how you got your start. You know, after doing some research, I had heard in the grapevine that you'd had $300 in your pocket when you went down to L.A. and you made your legendary name off of that.
That's right.
Go ahead. What hardships did you encounter?
What was that?
What hardships
what was the question?
Did you encounter from them? When you went down to L.A. with $300 in your pocket and made your name become a legend, what hardships did you encounter and how did you overcome them? How'd you stay the course here?
Well, you know what it was? It was when that happened, when I moved to L.A., it was, let's see, it was like 89 or 90. That was my second wave. What I did, you know, in about 86, we recorded our last 12-inch vinyl, and then I kind of retired. I stepped out of the business for a while, went back to Sacramento, and for a few years, I got in trouble. I always had one leg in the business and one leg out. You know what I mean? So we would make records, do shows and stuff, but I still had to pay the bills. So I was always working, hustling, doing whatever I had to do. You know what I mean? And so I ended up catching the case. I did 18 months, and when I got out, I did it at the RCCC, the Rio Consumers Correctional Center in Sacramento, California. When I got out of that, during that time, I was focusing on getting back into the music business. And so what I did, I think the Grammys had just opened up a category for rap. So I said, wow, this is big. Rap has finally made the Grammys, okay? So what I did, I had $300. I had a keyboard, and I had a duffel bag. I put a blanket, a pillow, and all my clothes or whatever clothes I could pack it in a duffel bag, and I rode a Greyhound to Los Angeles. And when I got there, I was homeless. And I slept on the roof of, it was the Broadway building on Hollywood and Vine. And this was, so I slept on the roof of the building. I ended up getting a job as a security guard in the lobby of the building. And I joined the gym, the Hollywood, huh? Hey, so, and then I started working on my second phase of my career, and that's when some of my, that's when I finally made money. And, you know, I did some pretty good albums, which I'll talk about later. But that's basically what that was. Yeah, the hardships, I was homeless. I was on the streets. I was sleeping on the roof of the Broadway building on Hollywood and Vine. And it was, you know, it was just all or nothing at that point.
You know what that is?
Good
that's
question.
A perfect example. That's a perfect example of a man with a dream that will not be stopped.
That's right.
When you're down
that's
and out, $300 in your pocket, and you've got a dream. Man, that's inspiration to all homeless people out there who have a dream and want to become something.
You're absolutely right. And the ironic thing is, whatever your dream is, don't let money hold you back. Don't let your circumstances hold you back. The ironic thing is, 5 years later, within 5 years, I had got lucky and just put myself in the right places and came up with the right albums, the right music, and I was a millionaire 5 years later and bought a 64-acre ranch in Calabasas. So that just shows you, follow your dream no matter where you're at in life.
Anybody out there listening, homeless, chase your dream.
Yeah, if you're homeless, if you're downtrodden, if you're beat down, don't ever give up.
That's right. The fight is over
once you
stop.
Right. Thank you.
But
thank
you
for the question, man.
You're undefeated.
That's right. Thank you for the
question,
man.
Thank you, man.
It.
Thank you for that question and the caller, homie. Thank you, powwow.
Yep.
Much love, homie. Let me take another call because we got a couple more before we continue. Much love to powwow. Let me take a couple more calls.
Thank you, Kyle. Thank you, Kyle.
Let me see. Let me go to 626 SGV. Caller, hello. You're live on the air, 626.
DJ Flash.
Okay.
Yeah.
DJ Flash.
Me. Who is this?
Michael Hook.
Michael Hook.
To your show. Yeah.
Oh, Michael Hook. Michael Hook.
Wow. Oh, yeah.
Man.
Wow.
Hey, killer. I'm glad you're listening because, you know, there would be no DJ Flash without Michael Hook. There'd be no Captain Rap. There'd be no MC Frosty. Let me tell you, this is the brother of Dumpy Hooks the Third, and these guys laid the foundation. Yeah, with the first man. I don't know what to say. Hey, Michael, I'm glad to hear from man. Yeah, him and Ronnie Hudson. Man, him and Ronnie Hudson wrote the California anthem. California Knows How to Party. And they released it in 1982, the West Coast Pop Lock. Hey, that was Michael Hook's idea. Man, Michael, tell him how you came up with the idea.
Oh, man, all right, I'll tell him. Okay, I had a group. Well, I was working with a guy named Don Campbell of the Lockers. I don't know if y'all have heard of them, but anyway. And I took him up to my friend's house, Brentonwood, and then we did a song called Camelot. And so things didn't work out. So what's the name? Don went his way, I went mine. Then I started up another group called the Ghetto Dancers. And then they was out of Englewood. But I told them, I said, we got to get y'all a good name. They didn't like the Ghetto Dancers until I got them on the Johnny Carson show with Steve Allen. American Bandstand, and so we liked the Ghetto Dancers. So then this dance popped out, but Don Campbell was the one who started the Camelot. But then the people in the street came out with a dance called Pop Lock. And I was saying to myself, I said, oh, man, everybody's doing this. And so I didn't have my dancers do the Pop Lock, and that's when I came with the idea. I said, and that's why I hooked up with Ronnie Hudson. I told Ronnie, I said, man, we need to do a song about California. Because I saw all these other rappers, all they talking about, New York, Chicago. And I said, man, we have to put in there, we got to talk about Watts. in Compton. I said, we do. Mm. And that record hit the radio. They're going to go crazy out there in Watson, Compton. And then next thing you know, KGFJ was playing the song, and it stayed on there 15 weeks. That was longer than Michael Jackson, the Gap Band, West Coast Pop Lock. And so then I told Ronnie, I said, when he was in the studio, I said, we got to say, cuz. Ronnie said, can I get it right on? I said, no. See, can I get it right on, cuz?
Oh, wow.
Yeah,
classic.
And then, we used the So Rough, So Tough from Trotman's, because at that time I told Ronnie we need to get a song that, people could recognize the music. Because we do original, nobody's going to recognize it. But anyway, before I did it, I told Ronnie, I got to find out who published this song. So a guy named Stan Hirschman over at one of the chapels. And so I told Ronnie, I'm going up there. So I had a meeting with what's his name? I forgot the cast name. Just said it. But anyway, I had a meeting with him. And so I told him, look, I want to use this song from the Trotman, So Rough, So Tough. But I said, if you don't want me to use it, I said, I'm not going to use it because I'm not going to be out there biting like everybody's doing. So he said, I'll tell you what to do, Mike. Press the record and get me a copy. And that's what I did. And the West Coast Pop Lock hit out there. We didn't have no problems. And then the record hit. And it became an anthem. Everybody talking about California knows how to party.
Classic.
And you say, I'm from California, 90s, I'm from the West Coast. So when the West Coast Pop Lock hit, everybody started talking about the West Coast and all that. So, but yeah, Flash, he was back then in the day, when he was doing this and, putting records out. So, yeah, but a lot of record companies said rap was no good. I went to Warner Brothers, everywhere, and they kept saying, no, it's a fad. And then they found out them cats out there in the streets selling 100,000 records out the trunk of the car through them swap meets, mom and pop stores. And what they did, they got these promoters, so-called promotion men, to go down into, South Central, make them deals. Some other cats, they couldn't come down there, so they sent them down, and they started making them deals with them cats out of Quantum Watts, giving them distribution deals. And to tell you the truth, the rap music pulled them out the fire because they was putting money all behind these rock groups, spending millions. And they wasn't selling no records, but it was going broke. When the rap came in, it was cheaper to produce, but it made $1,500 to do an album, then they sell maybe a million. So that's how the game was back in the day there. And so, I saw it. And so, and as the, years went by, then they, Tupac and them got hold to it and then put it into the California Love. California Love. So that's where, like Flash says, me, I'm kind of out there. I'm writing now. I'm writing books. I just finished my second book, and then I have my patent. I just got my patent from Washington on an invention I did called the purse protection. It helps the women when they get the purse snatched. If the purse heats up, they have to drop it. So, and I'm working on my second patent.
Okay.
I had my flash text. I said, I had to listen to your show. G. Lewis, it's good. You got a nice show,
man.
There.
Thank you, man.
Thank
you. You blessed
us, Michael,
right?
I appreciate
you blessed us.
Yeah, Michael's a blessing, man. I'm glad he's still alive. I'm glad he's still with us. And, an interesting footnote on that West Coast pop-up. At first, the way Michael tells it, they were going to call it the Los Angeles Pop Lock. Am I right or wrong?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're right.
They were going to call it the L.A. Pop Lock.
Right, now changed. I told Ryan, I said, wait a minute.
West Coast, you got the whole coast now.
Los Angeles. Yeah. So I said, I changed it to the West Coast. I said, this way, they play in San Diego, Frisco, all over
everywhere.
The West Coast. Yeah. That's what became the West Coast Pop Lock.
Washington. Yeah,
Flash. That was right. That was Flash. I was going to name that thing the L.A. Pop Lock, but then I figured that only stations played in L.A., they wouldn't play it nowhere else but L.A., so I had to change that name to the West Coast Pop Lock. And, a lot of cats was biting off that record. Yeah.
Man, how many times that thing been sampled, man? To this day, it's still being sampled or somebody's using it in some type of way.
Come on.
To this
day. That was the first time Compton was mentioned on a record, too. That was the City of Compton.
You know, that's the first time Compton was mentioned on a record. He brought a City of Watts.
You know?
Yeah. And that's what I told the Baker
I remember.
Boys.
The Baker Boys.
I was saying,
the Baker Boys.
Yeah, the Baker Boys. And K-Day. And I was telling them, I said, no. I said, I was the first one to start talking about Watts and Compton. I said, them cats out of Compton, they was talking about New York, everything else. Because to tell you the truth, see, a lot of back in the day, people was embarrassed to live out in Watts or Compton. They said, I live in England, Los Angeles. But when that record hit, then that's when they used to come to me and Ronnie bowing down. Man, that made my city good, home. Boy, brother, that's the soul.
Yeah.
Watts,
right?
And Compton. So, but yeah, that's what I told the Baker Boys. I told them the truth. I said, I'm the one who started talking about Compton Watts. Love Cats, they did it after the West Coast popped out. Then they started telling me I'm out of Compton, straight out of Compton and all that. But,
I got a story about the Baker Boys. Don't let me forget.
Hey.
Don't let me forget.
Okay, just right quick, Flash, just let me ask him this. I just want to ask you, do you guys feel that over time that you have gotten your true due respect and you know, from everybody pretty much for laying the foundation, like, you know, with that song and, you know, what that did even to this day. Like you said, cats from Compton and different people would salute you, but have you gotten your proper, do you feel due respect from, I mean, just the industry?
Oh, yeah.
Standpoint?
I got,
okay.
I got, they give my props, especially in the record industry. I got a... they gave me a double platinum. They flew me to New York, and they gave me double platinum. And, I get paid big time. Oh, yeah, I got my props.
Okay, that part.
That's Michael Hooks, baby. That's Michael Hooks
right
there. That's a legend right there.
Oh, you always say you got your paperwork. See, I would have never got paid if I'd been a dummy and just put the song out, you know, and trying to sell it to swap meets and, you know, stores. But I feel like I told Ronnie, I said, man, we're going to get the song registered in case it ever hits. We're going to get paid. And it hit.
And you're right.
You know,
and you know what? And you know what, Mr. Hooks? I'm going to tell you this. You're totally right, because I'm going to tell you that thing is so copyrighted and airtight that even, like, if I play that song, like I have a thing I do on YouTube, a show, and I play music and stuff. If I play that song, they shut me down. I get a copyright and the whole show gets shut down. So I'm going to tell you what,
that's
copyrighted and sealed tight. That is sealed tight right there.
That's right.
Look at you
that's
that.
Right.
Thank you. Yes, but I'm just trying to tell everybody out there, make sure your paperwork is good.
That's
a lot of these
that's
artists
right.
get ripped off. See, they get ripped off because the only thing they want to do is make a few dollars, and that song hits. And then when the record company owns all the rights to it, and then when them cats start getting old and falling off the mix, they say, wait a minute, that's my song. And it comes to know
that's
we
right.
own that. Yeah, we gave you $1,000. Yeah, we
that's
gave you $1,000, and then
you give a game.
Song, but,
you give a game tonight.
You know, it was mine. Mm-hmm.
That
sorry,
song. That song is in at least 16 movies. Okay, it's in Facebook, the social network. It's in like there's countless movies.
Oh,
it was on Snowfall, that series. It was on Fox.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
You know, about the cocaine. Yeah, it was the opening scene, episode one, season one. So a lot of
hello?
We have lost Flash. I think Flash is kind of going out. You're kind of low, Flash.
Going out? How about?
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah,
you
there?
Let me see. Did I hit a button?
We got you now.
Uh-oh. Oh,
hold
good.
Can you,
oh, okay.
Can you hear us?
Can you hear? Is that better?
Yeah, we can hear you. Yeah, we hear you. Yeah, you're good.
Am I good now?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes, sir.
You know, the main point is, you know, they're doing period movies, and there's a lot of money in licensing old songs to motion pictures and television. There's a lot of money in that now. So, you know, everybody make sure you got your paper right. And you want to own your master. There's a lot of talk about publishing and writers, but that's only one little part of it, right? I think publishing is like 9 cents or 9% or whatever. But if you own the master, you own your master recording,
That's where the bulk of the money, that's what you want, because everybody got to pay you. So,
yep.
Anyway.
You use your song.
Yeah.
And then, plus you got the publishing rights to it. So, yeah, that's what I tell everybody.
I have a question.
You pay for it. Oh, yes.
A question for Mr. Hooks. Where can
yes,
we purchase
can.
Your book?
I'm sorry?
Your books. Where can we purchase your book?
You can get it off on Amazon. The title is Evil Heart, October 31st, Demons Day. That's out on Amazon. It's a horror. I like to write horror and sci-fi. My next book is coming out, but they got it in production. It's called Butterfly. That's a sci-fi. That's not out yet. They got it in production right now, but The Evil Heart is out on Amazon. Barnes and Noble. So it's out there. And so I try, I was into everything. I like to write. I'm working on a kid's book now with one of my artists, Kavas. I'm working with the artist this Saturday, getting my ideas how to put that book together. It's a children's book, for the kids.
I'm still working on the book on the West Coast rap, and I really need to get in a more depth interview with Michael. So I'm putting you on notice, Michael. I'm gonna be calling you, buddy. Get ready for that phone call.
Okay. I'll be waiting on it.
I love you, man.
I love you too.
You blessed us. Thank you.
Thank you,
Mr. Hook. You really blessed us.
Yes,
I love you,
Mike. And just one last thing. Remember to tell all these artists, come on your show, just make sure they paperwork together. Because, like I said, back in their record companies, what they do, like I used to tell these cats, is that they'll give them $300,000, okay? Then what they do, why they end up broke, is because they take the $300,000, they go out and buy the car, which they don't pay cash for it. They get it. They say, I can give you, if they got $300,000, I'll give you $25,000, and I'll pay $800-$900 a month for the notes, and then they figuring that the record's gonna hit, and when it don't hit, then that's when they go back to the record company. Man, I had $300,000, now I'm in $1 million worth of debts because of you. So I tell these cats when they used to get that front money, you put it in the bank. I said, you work,
they
want to
fight.
You make it say $300 a week. I said, that's what you take. It's $300 a week. You don't take no more, no less. Then if that song don't hit, and within 6 months, you go back to your job, but you got money in the bank. Because a lot of them cats didn't take heed to that. And that's what I always said. I said, if I don't make any money, I'll never go broke. I see, like I said, another thing you have to do, when I got those big fat checks, I said, look, I control you. You don't control me. You got to control the money. Don't let the money control
that's
for
right.
you. And like I said, a lot of cats, and I tell my artists, I said, you don't fall in that peer pressure. I feel like me, I've been in this business over 50 years. I don't drink, I don't smoke, never did drugs. And I said, the cats used to tell me, the people I hung around in my business, they said, oh, come on, it ain't going to hurt you. Come on. I've been here, a little snorkeling, a little weeding. I said, no. I said, just say no. And Lonnie Simmons, let's give you that total experience. And what's his name, Flash Bill, tell you, Lonnie said, you know, Mike, you're the only man that I know that don't get high. Because everybody went through total experience, they want to get high. But I told him, I said, I don't get high. And I said, I'm a leader, not a follower. You see, I don't follow the crowd. I said, my game is to make money and to keep it. Once I make it, because that money's too hard to make, to come by, to get it in your hands. Next thing you know, you broke. Then you're on TV saying, I had it all, but I lost it.
Yeah.
I said, I'm like, I ain't the guy. That's what I tell people. You get the money. Hold on. Most of these cats coming on your shows, rappers in the business, and they light luck up, and then that fat check comes to them. They don't know what to do. But one last thing, I'm gonna tell you something. See, a lot of these guys when they're young, they say, if I ever make any money, I'm gonna buy me 5 cars. I'm gonna get me 6 houses, and then that money hit them by luck, and that's what's in their mind. But see, when I was young, so I said, if I ever make any money, I said, first thing I'm gonna do. I'm putting it up in the bank. I'm holding on to it and find out what I can use it to make more money, but not to just blow it because I got it. Because like I said, it's hard to get. So just make sure your paperwork is together. And when you go up to them companies or whoever you deal with, make sure you can control the money. Don't let the money control you. And that's the problem with a lot of artists. They let that money control them. Like everybody was telling me, oh, are you going to buy you a big house? I said, man, I ain't that guy. I ain't no peer pressure. I live like that Hollywood life. I said, y'all can have that. I said, I got my money in the bank. I said, you can live.
That's right.
I can tell a lot of these people in Hollywood.
They
live from day to day. That's why in Beverly Hills, they got those pawn shops. Because, you know, Hollywood ain't like it used to be when they get them $20 million to a movie. Right now, they see how the ticket's going. And the ticket ain't right. That's why a lot of these movie stars, so-called movie stars, putting their houses up for rent. You know, oh, you can rent Robert De Niro's house for $50,000 a month. They need money. They out there hustling. So them days are gone, but they're still trying to live that life. You see, so that's what I'm saying. Well, they made money, but a lot of them don't let these celebrities fool you. When they die, that's when you find out they broke. But when they living, you know, people let them have the cars because it's good publicity. Like, you know, say if a Robert De Niro won a Rolls Royce, it comes from Tony Franzil in Beverly Hills. He's getting all that free advertising, but the car don't belong to Robert. Same thing like the Grammys. Chicks walk around with $10 million necklace around their necks, and they say, oh, this is by Gigano. Gigano getting all that, but at the end of the day, she better turn that stuff back in. And then head on back home. He said, what happened to you? Oh, that didn't belong to me. It belonged to Gigano. You know, he let me use it for the Grammy. You see, so.
Not even the suit. The suit didn't belong to him.
Huh? They're faking and shaking. That's all they're doing.
Yeah, shaking and faking, man.
Saying. You make the money in this business, you learn to hold on to it, and don't let these other cats tell you, man, you should be buying you a nice car. You should have women's on your side. You listen to them fools, you be broke. You be broke. So that's what I always tell them, you know, hold on to your money. Because that money's hard to come
back
in this business.
That's right.
You know, so that's what I'm saying. Yeah, I got my props. And like I said, I'm doing okay, but I never let that money control me. See, and that's what I try to tell all guys. Don't let that money control you.
Or drugs either.
Yeah. When they used to come to me and, you know, think I want to get high, I said, nope. And you know, and I had women around me, and they said, oh, come on, everybody else is doing it. I said, oh, no, I ain't the guy. Flash, tell you. I ain't never had no drugs, no cigarettes.
Right.
And like I said, and I've been around certain celebrities. You go up to their house, it's all sitting there. I said, man, the only thing, I'd be up there trying to get connections. But I wasn't up there to get into their drugs and stuff. I was looking for some, you know, connections. But when it came to me, see, I could say no. Oh, come on, be like everybody else is getting high. Come on. You playing square. Come on. I said, that's right. High school, they said, I'm mama's little boy when I wouldn't smoke. And I said, that's right, I'm mama's little boy. In the military, when I was in basic, when we finished, drill sergeant said, you're not naggers no more, you're soldiers. Drinks on me. I said, drill sergeant. I said, I don't drink. I'm not going back to where I was alcoholic. Oh, come on, it's a bing, I'll hurt you. I said, nope. I said, I'll take a 7-Up of Coke. And then they started laughing. But then after a while, when we went out, they said, oh, he don't drink. Give him a Coke. I said, that's right. See, so it was trying to belittle me, and I should have fell into a peer pressure. Come on, you guys, don't be laughing at me. Come on. And then next thing I started drinking and smoking, then, you know, I'd be like the rest of them. So that's why I say you got to be a leader, not a follower. Got to be.
Yeah.
You don't.
Yeah.
You be following the crowd. you fall off.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, see, so always be a leader,
you're
not a follower.
On it.
Huh? Yeah.
I said you're still firm with it.
Oh, yeah, you got to be, See, so, but that, that's why I just, you know, hope that all these young artists, talk today.
Thank you for those words of wisdom, that old school knowledge. You know, we still appreciate and love you for all you've done.
Oh, yeah, same
and,
here.
I look forward to seeing you sometime this summer. I'm going to get your way.
All right, all right, killer.
Okay,
sounds
man.
Good. And G. Lewis,
okay,
good
Michael.
Talking to
yes,
all the cats out there.
Yeah,
and,
thank you,
yeah,
man.
You keep up the good work. You got a good show there.
Yeah, and I'm gonna give them your number so they can call
yes,
you.
We would love to have you on here.
Get you on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got to get on.
Yes, sir.
You know, I like to have on your show and put Martis Cavazos on your show. Either one you need.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, Kavon.
Okay. We can work that out.
All right. Sounds good. And Flash, you know, yeah, give him a number. There's no problem. And then
I will, man.
Do an interview on him. Because I'm in the background. That's how you tell everybody. See, I stay in the background. That's why, even the song hit, like I used to
say,
everybody around the world know
but you
Michael,
got the knowledge.
They don't know me. Yeah. See, so I could walk the streets. I don't want to be that guy. Look, that's the guy that did this. Even, you know, one last thing on my book, they wanted to put my picture on. This publisher in New York wanted to put my picture on. Send us a picture. I said, no. I don't need no picture on the book. See, because if the book hit, I want to be walking down the street. And, wait a minute, that's that guy that wrote that book. So you a target.
Right.
You're a target. So people like that know how to be, you know, being out there.
You a wise man. You like a wise man.
Very wise. Yeah.
Yes, sir.
Very wise.
Well, thank you, Mr. Hooks. You really blessed our show tonight. I want to tell you that and thank you because you really blessed us tonight, man. You know, we got Flash. We got a two for one tonight. So you blessed us, man. You really did. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Michael.
And thank you to DJ Flash for texting me. And that's us out on step, listen to you on the show there. Sounding good.
Right on, man. All right, we're going to be here for another hour and a half. Don't go. So,
Just tune in.
We're going to be here.
We got some more stuff to talk about. So just listen in. Flash got a whole lot. Thank you again, Mr. Hooks. Much love. Thank you, sir.
Yes.
Thank you, sir. Much love to you guys.
Woo! All right. Michael Hooks. Man.
That's a legend.
That's a legend right there. Man.
Yeah, that is. Man, did he? Oh, my God. I was just blown away.
Yeah,
and you know what?
Down.
We have so
yeah.
I know we got, I mean, the phone lines are lit up. I don't want to keep taking calls because we got to talk. We got to talk,
man.
Flash.
You taking a couple on calls, man. Yeah.
Okay. Because the people have been waiting a minute.
Yeah, whatever.
So let me go to these callers. Okay.
It's all right. Your show. You do it the way you want.
Okay, well, and then people have good questions, and then we may get another. I mean, I didn't even know we were gonna get Mr. Hook, so that was. I'm glad I answered the phone.
Yeah.
So let me go to these phones.
Yeah.
559. You're on the line. Hello.
What's up, man?
What up, man? Good evening, homie.
DJ Flash.
I recognize this voice.
That's my dog right there,
something.
Man. I just said.
Hey, that's a legendary Sir T. Sir T, let me tell you about Sir T for a minute. Sir T, when I was a DJ in Kern County, I was the first one to bring funk to the airwaves, except for Sir T. He was broadcasting out of Delano. Back then, the AM stations were popular. FM was still in its infancy, you know? So the AMs were popping. And we were playing he was the youngest program director and music director at the age 13.
Wow.
And he was going into clubs. He was 13 and he was a boss at 13. Had his own AM radio show, 5,000 watts, broadcast to Fresno, Bakersfield, almost up to Sacramento. And me and him became friends.
Wow.
Here's what's so ironic about it. The old lady that owned my station that I was at, KTKR 1310 AM, Mrs. Mann, and the old lady, Mrs. Jones, that owned his station, right? They were friends from, back in the 40s and 50s. You know, they created Operation Santa Claus, the food drives. They did all that. But they allowed, when I would go off the air, I had a promo for his radio show. Okay, everybody, tune in to KCHJ, whatever it was, 1240 AM, I forgot. And check out my man, Sir T. And then when he went off the air, he would cross-promote me. So we built our audience up, you understand, by cross-promoting on radio stations. Nobody does that. That's unheard of.
Right.
Different broadcasting companies.
So, yeah, that's unheard of for a radio
nowadays.
Station.
That's definitely unheard of.
Yeah, come on, man. They're not going to do it. But that's how we rolled, and that's how we did. We didn't. Anyway, what's up, Sir T?
Man, just call and give you props on me. Was the first white boy rapper. And, you know, it's ironic because the West Coast has not ever been given the props that they actually deserve. I don't even think – I listen to Mr. Hooks, and, you know, that's a legend right there, but I don't even think he's got the props that he should deserve, bro.
No,
I don't think Flash has got him.
That's what I said. That's why I asked him that. That's why I asked him that, because I don't think so. That's why I asked him that. Yeah.
No,
you know, I'm gonna keep it real, bro. I mean, I don't want to keep this too long because this is about Flash, but – I mean, back in the day, you know, I came on, Flash came on shortly after me, but we were the first ones to basically play hip-hop. No, actually, it wasn't even hip-hop then. It was disco and funk and soul. And then later on, in March of 79, I had, you know, when I came on the air in January of 79. And anyway, I learned how to get free promo records, and that shit was, man, when you're a DJ and you're paying for records, that shit gets expensive, so... Once I learned how to get the promos, I just happened to be in PolyGram the day, and PolyGram was Spring Records was distributed by PolyGram.
Records
is Stephen Rifkin's uncle. No, I don't think so, man. But Spring was distributed through them, and that's Stephen Rifkin. That's SRC. That's Stephen's uncle and his dad on that label. And they busted out with the white label test press of the Fatback Band 12 album. And see, back then, like, me and Flash could play whatever the hell we wanted. We played album cuts.
Right.
If that shit was banging, we listened to it, put it on the air, and then we play it that night. And if the phones lit up, it was a hit. Support that.
Right.
You know, so I played the King Tim the Third. I went home, listened to that shit, played it. I think it was March 1st or 2nd. It was still on the White Label album. They hadn't even released Rapper's Delight yet. And this was an album cut, but I played the first rap
Before
record on
Rapper's
the radio,
Delight.
Man.
Wow.
Yeah, the first actual vinyl record, you know, we played it out of KCHJ in Delano. And, you know, and like Flash's records, Flash, you know, like people don't give him his props. I hear all these, everybody got this name, DJ. Flash was the first Flash. You know what I mean? So it's like, you know, that's my boy. I got to give him his props. But we used to run this shit. We used to get paid to do all the concerts. You know, we used to be runners for like Two B's and Al Haymon when Al Haymon was a concert promoter.
Wow.
Now he's handling Mayweather making all that bank. But, I mean, we used to run this whole area, man. And we never got the props, man. But I'm glad he's on here. I'm glad he's writing a book. You know, there's some other books you might want to check out, How the West Was Won by Scotty D. Spencer. Because, you know,
Scotty D.
That's my boy.
Shout out to Reb Ali.
I got a Scotty D. story.
You need to watch How the West Was Won, man.
Yeah, How the West Was Won.
Okay.
That's Scotty D.'s book. Yeah. Sir T, man. Hey. Thanks for calling in, man. You know.
Hey, brother, I'm glad you started
doing
interviews now, man.
Yeah, you know.
You brought him out. I'm glad. Hey, check it out, Flash. I'm glad because, look, you brought him out tonight. You bringing out people. Legends, man, that we wouldn't even hear from. So I want to thank you, Sir T, and Mr. Hooks, because, you know, I want to thank you, Flash, like you said, because you're bringing him out.
Yes, sir.
I've known this dude 42 years, and he's always been solid, man. That's one of my oldest, dearest friends, man. So I'm glad you're doing it. I'm glad you're finally coming out your shell. You know, I used to call him Casey, man, because his ass was like, back in the day, looked like Casey from Casey and the Sunshine Band. I used to clown him like that, but that's my boy, man. I got nothing but love for him.
Yeah.
Hey, before you hang up, 30.
What's that?
Todd, right? This is Todd, right?
Yeah.
We were supposed to have him on the show one time, but we had a lot of technical difficulties, so he wasn't able to come on at that time. So we got to bring him back. I found him on Facebook. Yeah,
I knew that name was
so we got to bring you back. We got to bring you back, then, see?
I don't want to stay on too long, man. This is Flash's night, so you know what I mean? Keep talking about what you did.
Yeah, we'll bring you back.
I mean, no doubt.
Okay, but
my man, I'll be listening to you.
Hey, T.
What's that?
Tell him what you did with Roger Clayton. You and Roger Clayton, started Uncle Dan's Army.
Yeah, me and Roger started, you know, back in the day they had a thing called record pools. And, you know, DJs didn't want to pay all that money for records, so they'd pay like $100 a month. And they'd get, you know, we'd get service from all the record labels. And we would charge the DJs and they'd come pick up their vinyl. And the reason we were able to come up, because we didn't start the pool till like 91, I believe. And there was other pools before us, like Impact in L.A., Foot, my boy, rest in peace, Eardrum at Tables of Distinction. You know, there was VIP, there was Shore Records. There was a lot of record pools, black record pools, because you had black record pools and you had disco record pools, and we were like an urban record pool. And the reason we were to come up is because there was a dude out of Oakland that ran the pros. Nobody likes that fool. None of the program. I don't care if they can deny it now, but nobody likes him because he looked like that dude Pinky from Friday and was egotistical as a motherfucker. Nobody likes his ass. Right. I mean, I won't even mention his name, bro. But nobody likes him, man. So the other black fools wanted me to come up and take him out of the Central Cali, the Northern Cali area. And it took us about 45 days to do that because I was behind it. Greg Mack helped out, Roger Clayton, and we had all the other black pools directors. So what I did, though, to make it unique is I got all my DJs on the radio. So we controlled BDS, which was – now it's media-based. Back then it was BDS. But we controlled that shit. So we could deliver like 1,300 spins a week on radio stations all up and down the West Coast, all the way from Cali to Arizona. So, you know, that turned into me working for Death Row, Ruthless. I at the end of my – I think it's the heyday, I was doing 30 – I was contracted out by 33 labels and 17 brands. You know, brands like Echo, Red Bull, when they were brand new. And you know, Jerry Hell is the one that said, "Steve, why would you want to run down and hit that one cow when you can walk down and hit them all?" And that was the best advice I ever took. You know what I mean? That's a whole other story. But right now, you know, like I said, it's all about my boy Flash. So do your thing, homie. I'll be listening.
All right, T, man. Thank you, bro. God bless you, man. Thanks for calling in, man.
Take care.
Okay. No doubt.
Thank you.
Love
see you in a minute. Much love, man. Oh, my God. Man, hey, we're getting some gems and jewels tonight. Hey, Flash, I thank you again, brother. Just you coming on here is bringing so much more out, and we ain't even got started with you. It's just a beautiful thing.
I'm letting them do my interview for me. See, I told you I was shy about interview.
Right.
Yeah, man.
Jesus Christ.
Hey, Roger Clayton is my family, too, Flash.
Yep.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, man, Roger was so cool, man. Roger was a it hurt me. I seen him right before he passed, and you know, that killed me, man. I went to his services. You know, I went there, and I drove all the way up from Sacramento for that. But he surely missed.
But his son
done
is
so
keeping
much.
Him alive. His son is definitely keeping
His son
is definitely keeping his name alive.
Yeah, Marcus. I think his name is
Marcus.
Right.
His name is Marcus. Yeah.
Well, that's so you're related. I heard G. Lou say something about what you're going through with your family. I don't know what it is. I don't want to put on it, but I want you to know you got my blessings and my condolences, whatever you need. You got it, you know.
Prayers. We need prayers right now. So thank you so much. I appreciate it. We appreciate it. Yeah, we appreciate that.
Okay. Queen Jean.
Right on.
Queen Jean.
I'm looking at this picture of you in two shorts.
Yeah. Huh?
Oh.
I see a picture of you in two shorts right here.
Right. Yeah, that was at Two Short
Studio
down in Oakland. Mm. Yeah, at his studio. And, hey, man, that's a humble guy, a good guy to work with. Too Short. I mean, he blessed me. He's one of the early pioneers, you know? I mean, he was one of... They're like the earliest on the West Coast.
Definitely.
He came right after
most
us.
Definitely.
Yeah. Born to Mac. I mean, come on. I used to hear.
Born to Mac.
I was from Sacramento.
And Life is Too Short.
Yeah,
those are my two favorites.
Oh, come on, man. Come on. When would go.
Yeah.
When I was in Sacramento visiting my family, you know, in the early 80s, this guy pulled up next to me at a stoplight, right? And I heard this dude cussing, talking about, giving me head, doing this, Betty Boob and all this. And I went, what the heck? Because you couldn't do that on rap records back then. Duffy Hicks told us, no, keep it clean. We want radio play. And but I heard this guy cussing coming out, and that was Too Short, man. That dude, he broke a mold right there.
The legend is still out here doing it, man. Shout out to Short, man. Still out here doing it.
Same style. This style never grow old.
Never compromise
man,
itself, though.
Flow,
you know what I mean?
Yeah, I love it. I put it on today.
Shout out to Short.
Yeah.
Dr. Short, let me take a couple more callers, man. The people been waiting.
Yeah,
and then let me see. Let me go to a special caller right here. Caller, hello. You're live on the air.
I'm live on the air. I can't believe it. Got through. Like,
is this Cadillac?
Caller, And you guys, I am delighted.
No, we are. It's our pleasure.
Sucking up
our
pleasure.
That's the tweet.
No, okay.
This is Calvin, man. This is Calvin. I'm not Tweet Cadillac today. I'm just Calvin.
Okay. What's up, Calvin? Thanks for calling in, man.
Hey, man. I'm just sucking up this game, man. Just sucking up this game.
Man, this is, yeah, this is, you know, a lot of stuff went on, man, back in the days. It was a long time ago, though, you know, but a lot of stuff happened. And a lot of people nowadays, they take it for granted. They say, oh, it was always like this, you know. But
and to us, like, it seemed like it was yesterday, though, because
yes,
everything that y'all been talking about, it's like I lived it. So it was,
yeah,
to me,
you
it was
OG,
like
you
yesterday.
Were there.
It was like yesterday,
you,
man.
You an OG.
And, wow.
I heard you chopping it up with Frosty. Yep. MC Frosty.
Man,
I heard you guys chopping it up.
Those were the days, though. Those really were the days. These are the new times and ways. So hopefully, man, hip-hop will stay alive in Cali. That's all that I really want to happen. You know, I know it's going to transition and move around and what have you, but as long as it can stay, man, you know, and as long as we can support each other's music, everything should be okay.
Yeah. Right. Yeah, man. I mean, I don't know if they still rap. Are they still rapping today? I mean, that's what I wonder. Is anybody rapping today?
No. It's rap. It's not hip-hop.
Yeah.
Rap. It is rap. It's just not hip-hop. It's rap, though. We'll say that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, man. I don't know. I don't hear too much of it. Like... Back in the day, there were classics, like Sir Mix-a-Lot, classic. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Everybody make I ain't hearing no classics today. I'm telling you, for me, I turn the radio off most of the time. Now, I like some of these guys like the Migos. I like the Migos. I love the way they bounce that shit back and forth. The Migos, Bad and Bougie. You know, that shit was hard. And a lot of these guys I do like. I like some of that down south. They call it mumble rap. But, you know, as long as it's good music, it don't matter what they're saying, you know, shaboom, shaboom, bang, bang. What, as long as it's working, it's working. But they ain't making no classics. Hey, 20 years from now, ain't nobody going to stand around saying, ooh, shaboom, shaboom, bang, bang. That's a classic. Ain't nobody going to do that.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Well,
you know what I mean?
Microwave. Microwave.
Yes, you know. Oh, come on, man. You're a legend, man. Thank you.
They're not
calling
thinking
in,
no
man.
Thought. They're just saying the first thing that come off their head. That's the reason why nobody going to remember it.
And
they're
one line don't even match. Well, one line, one sentence don't match the last sentence. It's like two different things. You get dancing on Mars, and then all of a sudden you're driving in cars. It's like, whoa, okay. But anyway, but it's music.
Oh, that actually rhymed. Look at you.
I like that rhyme.
Yeah. You know, that was for Blondie.
Man.
Blondie came out the same year I did.
Shout out to Blondie.
You know.
Shout out to Blondie.
Yeah, he bars and eating cars. Yeah, shout out to Blondie. You know, hey, she wasn't no rapper. Everybody says she was the first white rapper. Okay, she came out a few months before me, but she was a punk rocker. You know, you go to see Blondie, you ain't going to see no rap show.
That was
kind of,
that was just kind of like default. That was kind of by default, really. You know, that was just like that record.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a bad record, too.
Shout out to
Blondie. Come on.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Shout out to Blondie.
Shout out.
For sure.
Man, Ratchet was cold. I still play that record.
Yeah.
But I'm getting right.
Sweet Cadillac.
That track is still banging, too. That track's still banging. I know she didn't write it, but she definitely pulled it off. She solidified
her. Right, she
pulled it off. She solidified
you know,
her.
It helped take rap to a new audience, make it more acceptable.
Yep.
I mean, there's a lot of songs that cross, you know what I mean? And so, hey, God love her. Thank her for doing that.
Yeah,
Somebody need to find her and interview her. She probably about 70 years old now. But I'm sure that she got New York hip hop stories that'll blow y'all mind. I know she got
the Shout out to Blondie, man. For
sure. Shout out to Blondie.
We gotta look her up. Tweed Cadillac, the classic six pack. The classic six pack. Tweed
Cadillac
still doing it too, man. got the classic six pack out right now, man. Shout out to Queen Cadillac.
Okay. Hey,
it
man.
Ain't even a week
you know,
old. It's not even a week old, sir.
Okay.
You might enjoy it. You might enjoy it.
Yeah, I'm gonna get the link to it for sure.
TweeCadillac.com. You already got the link to it.
Okay, that's it then.
So
nothing
can stop you now. Nothing can stop you now.
Check it out tonight. Okay. I like it.
TweeCadillac, baby.
We're stopping it now, baby. Yeah. All right, Tweed.
Much love,
sir. Thank you, man.
Tomorrow night, Tweed.
Yep.
Thank you,
sir. I'll see you tomorrow.
Much love, Tweed. Let him know about Tweed's show, too, tomorrow.
Yeah, tomorrow night. Tweed Cadillac is on Blog Talk Radio. He got a show as well. The After Six Cruise Mix tomorrow night, 7 p.m. Pacific on Blog Talk Radio.
What's the number? You know the call-in number?
Yeah. It's
three.
Go ahead and I'm going to get it for you.
Just
on the phone? Okay, Tweed is on the phone.
8436. 347-855-8436.
8436. All right, I'm going to check you out tomorrow night at 7?
Every Thursday night at 7. And we don't be late.
Okay, that's good. That's all right.
We got the rap.
You ain't going to be late like G. Lou.
Oh, shit.
Like
right, he's out of shot at me. Look, Tweed shot me. He shot me.
he got
he shot me.
Hey, yeah, he's shooting
damn,
me coming
Tweed.
At you, man.
Hey, I didn't know you was late. All right, Tweed. I didn't know that because I was late. I didn't know you was even late. You blew my bad.
I was. Only 1 minute. It was only like 1 minute.
It was only one minute.
Oh, well, shit, man. That's
we let him slide.
That's nothing. You got a quality
show.
All right, Tweed.
And we still got an hour to go. So, man, let's keep it pimping, baby.
Let's keep going. Yeah. You know, I got a quick story I want to tell you about. The Baker Boys, I got a lot of school, man. Come on. Hey,
go ahead.
For those that don't know, I did an interview for Scotty D. Spencer, a long, extensive interview on his book, How the West Was Won. And he said, just start from the beginning. And I told him, like, I said, look, I grew up poor than most other little kids. Because a lot of people think, oh, DJ Flash, some white dude, he must have, you know, came in and bought his way into hip-hop. But it wasn't like that. Look, a couple years before I was born, okay, my mother and her 8 siblings and her parents lived under a bridge in Arkansas. That's how poor family I come from. And so she came home from school one day. Her father had the truck loaded up, and they moved to Missouri. He became a sharecropper. Right? A couple years later, I was born, okay, out of wedlock. I never met my father. But we were struggling, and I remember my mother, when I was probably 4 or 5, she would go pick cotton, right? There was a cotton field not too far from where my grandfather, they built their house with their own 2 hands, little small house. But that's the house where my youngest memories were. And I remember I'd be in the cotton field with my mother. She would put me on the cotton sack, like a 10-foot cotton sack, and drag me along the row as she's picking cotton. And I'm a little kid, you know, running, playing with all the other kids out there. But when I get tired, I lay down on that cotton sack. She would drag me along, right? So, you know, eventually we moved to, like, St. Louis, Kansas City, certain little, you know, towns back in the Midwest, but we lived in the projects. And back there, all the projects, most of the houses, most everything is built out of brick, red brick. I don't know if you've been back there, but bricks were popular. So when we moved into the projects, I was like, hey, man, this is a step up for me because, you know, we got inside running water. We had, you know, my grandfather's, we had a pump. We had to go outside and pump the water, bring it in, put it on a wood stove, heat it up, pour in the bathtub or do dishes, you know what I mean? So we didn't have no running water. We had an outhouse. So when I moved into the projects, that was a step up for me. But it was a struggle. We moved around picking fruit, living in poor neighborhoods, in the ghettos. And I grew up like that. I was always an outsider trying to fit in because, you know, I was probably the new kid at school at least 2 or 3 times a year. And so I would come in. Everybody else grew up, went to school together. They knew I was always trying to fit in. But I learned to get along with everybody and to love people just for their character, for being them. You know, you had your assholes, but you had good people too, you know, of all races. So I learned to adapt and to fit in. And I think that helped me when I became a member of the Rapper's Rap Group, because it was highly unlikely for me, a white boy from Taft, California, right, okay, in Kern County, Bakersfield, to be in a Los Angeles first rap group. I mean, come on, man. How does that happen? That happened, you know, because, I hustled my way in. I met Ducky Hooks, and it's a long story, you know, but I rapped with him.
Flash, how did you even get down to L.A. coming from Taft? You, like, most of your time was in up north. How did the transition for you to get down to L.A.?
Man, you know what? For all those years from 80, I signed with Duffy Hooks in 81. I met MC Frosty, Love and C, Macamo, Mr. I. Shout out to mm-hmm. all you guys. I love you. King MC, my man. But what it was, I'll tell you what. I was on the radio station and I did mobile DJs, but I was also a garbage man. Okay, I worked for the waste manager, Westside Waste Manager. So back in the day, we had the little aluminum garbage cans, and I would, you know, hang on back of the truck. We called it bucking cans. I was bucking cans.
Right.
So I was a garbage man, you know, in Taft, California, a little community of 14,000. You know, I had oil fields and, you know, but anyway, I went to the record store one day, and I asked a dude over in Bakersfield at the record shop. I said, "You got anything new?" And he looked up on the wall. Back then, all the 12 inches were up on the wall. He pulled down this label. It was a gray label with black print. It said Rapper's Rap Disco Company, the Gigolo Groove by Disco Daddy and Captain Rap. And he dropped a needle on it. Ooh, I heard Rick James, "Give It to Me, Baby." I said, "Ooh, I like that." Then they came in with "Party, Party, Everybody, Everybody, Don't You Know It's Time to Party? Who's this, y'all? Who's that? Well, it's Disco Daddy and Captain Rap." I said, "Ooh, let me have that. Let me get two of them, right?" So like Sir T said, we could play anything we wanted to because we was our, you know,
right.
The old ladies, when we went on the radio station, when I went on at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, man, she got out of there as fast as she could. She didn't like that music. She was playing them old 78 Western things, you know, until I come
on. Right, right.
And I blew it up. And so anyway, I played a record. And while I was at the record store, the guy gave me, he said, "Here, the guy left his business card. He came through here a couple of days ago. And I bought these records for him. He left his business card." And I looked at it, it said, "Duffy Oaks the Third, Rappers Rap Disco Company." So I'm at the radio station playing this record. I played about four times, you know, all 10 minutes each time. I gave about 40 minutes of airtime to Disco Daddy and Captain Rap that day. And even after that, at least twice a day. But when I got home, I couldn't wait to call Duffy Hooks. I called Duffy. And I had been rapping for a couple of years, ever since I heard Rapper's Delight by Sugar Hill Gang. I heard that like
right.
a couple of years prior in 79 in the disco over in Bakersfield. And ever since I heard that song, I went, "Wow, this is crazy." And I started writing raps. So when I was DJing, I was busting raps live, rapping for free, doing this and that, writing all these raps. And, you know, it was just something that I loved doing. I never even had a dream that I would be making a record or being a rap group in L.A. So I called Duffy Hooks and I said, "Hey, man, I'm DJ Flash. I got a radio station here in Bakersfield, and I'm playing your record. I love it." He said, "DJ Flash," he goes, "I caught your show a couple of days ago when I was down there." He goes, "Okay, yeah, I need all the help I can get." And I said, "Well, hey, man, you can count me because I play what I want, when I want, and I love this record. You're the first label I seen from Los Angeles." And he said, "Yes, we're located at Sunset and Cahuenga, right here on the corner." And
Sunset and Cahuenga.
Right, but across the street from the Jack in the Box there. And so I said, "Listen," I said, "I'm a promoter." I said, "You know, I promote concerts and for the car clubs and everything, right? I do dances, college dances." DJing, is there any chance of me getting Disco Daddy and Captain Rat to come down here for an event I got planned? He said, yes. He goes, I will get those guys, give them your number and have them get in touch with you. He goes, by the way, Flash, I'm putting together a new rap group. I'm holding auditions in L.A. and I'm advertising on the radio, right? And it's going to be a six-member act, and it's going to be fashion modeled after Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. I said, man, I couldn't believe it. What was he just now telling me? He's putting together a rap group. Guess what? I rap. So I said, Duffy,
right.
I can rap. He said, you can rap? He said, spit a little rap for me, DJ. So I spit a rap. I don't remember what rap it was, but I had an arsenal of them, right? And when I was done, he said, man, that's just what I'm looking for. He said, I'm going to put you in the group. Plus, you a DJ, and the group needs a DJ. So I'm going to put you in the group. He put me in the group. And he said, meet me here in 2 weeks. I'll have my other five guys. And I drove down there. I met them. And, I met all the guys in the Rappers Rap group. And that's how I got in the group, man. It was just an unlikely thing. The
rest was history. Wow.
Yeah, a chance phone call. Chance phone call.
Again, like you said earlier, people chase you, you know, don't be afraid to go after shit. You know what I mean? You said that earlier. And again, you know, it rings true again. Wow.
Yeah, man. Yeah. That's you know, you got to follow your dream, man. I mean, you got to follow your dream. Don't let nobody say no. I had all my cousins and other people said, man, you ain't going to make no money in a rap. You ain't going to do. Why you even messing with that? Man, don't even talk to me with that. Don't even come at me like that.
But Flash, let me ask you this. How was it being that you went after your dream and you landed in L.A. and you're now with the crew and all that? How was that, though, still for you transitioning from where you were to L.A.? Like, I'm sure it was culture, like, just different. How was that for you, making that transition and making that home for you and all that in L.A.?
Well, you know, I went to, you know, Disneyland, Hollywood. I visited there and... The Santa Ana Mountain Chain runs between Bakersfield and L.A. And I always looked up that mountain chain. I said, man, I want to be an actor. I want to do something with my life, right? And I didn't know what I was going to do, man. And anyway, I got the job at the radio station. I started DJing. And, you know, that's how I met Duffy. So I stayed in Taft and Bakersfield area. I didn't move to L.A. Every time we made records, I would I would go back and forth.
Right.
So that's how I did
that. Right, right.
And not until I had the $300 and moved to the Broadway building, in 1990, did I actually move to L.A. and start my second career. Yeah, so, you know, I stayed in Taft. I mean, I went back and forth. And, You know, the thing about Duffy, Duffy Hooks, was he was from L.A. Him and Michael, his father, Jerry Hooks, was in the music business. He did, like, Billie Holiday. And when his kids grew up in L.A., they came from Oklahoma, Michael Hooks and Duffy Hooks. And they were raised in the record business. They used to have the Hooks label. They did Iron and Board Slim. They did groups like that that were blues, right, singing the blues.
Right.
And then Duffy always wanted to try the R&B, so he made a song called Sugar Frosted Lover. But he can never really compete with the big labels, with the marketing and promotion. Anyway, so him and his father, Duffy and his father, they went to New York, New Jersey over there. And his father was friends with Joey Robinson. They were old record guys. Mm-hmm. And... He was married to Sylvia Robinson.
That's the Sugar Hill people, right? Yeah.
Yeah, they started Sugar Hill. Well, Joey had a record label called Enjoy Records. And Duffy was working in the sales department when, like, some of the earliest raps came out. Before Sugar Hill, I think they came out on Enjoy. And then they went over to Sugar Hill, Grandmaster Flash and him. But so Duffy was working the sales department. And he was selling he saw the success of Enjoy. Then he saw the Sugar Hill Gang sell millions. And he told his father, Daddy, we got to go back to L.A. and start a West Coast rap label because there is none. let's go back there. So back then, you could buy a summer bus pass on Greyhound for $200, $250. You could ride all over the country and back home for the whole summer. So Duffy had him a summer bus pass. Him and his father packed a suitcase. And he had a list of all the mom-and-pop distributors, the one-stops in Chicago, in Detroit, in Atlanta, in Los Angeles. Duffy was selling them records, so they knew him by name. And these were the urban records, you know, that they trusted him. They were waiting for him for the new hip-hop record. So when he came to L.A., he brought that list with him. And he set out. He went to see Cletus Anderson, who had a chain of black-owned record stores in Los Angeles called BIP, okay? Mm-hmm. Through him alone, you could sell records. You know what I mean? All them, he had like 15 record stores. And then, so Duffy set out to find his first act. He went to the Carolina West, I believe it was, and
Carolina
there was a battle
West.
Between, there was a battle going on, a rap battle between a guy named Disco Daddy and another guy named Tracy, okay? They had ties the week before. Ice-T. So Disco Daddy won that night. They tied the week before, but Disco Daddy won that rap show that night. And Duffy Hooks approached him and said, look, my name's Duffy Hooks. I'm starting a West Coast rap label, and I want you to be my first act. So he's like, wow, okay. So, and then, you know, Disco Daddy, he figured it'd be easier if there were two of them. Because, man, back then, you could, you know, rap it for 10 minutes? Come on, man. A record. So he held auditions. He met Captain Rap, and Captain Rap could tell you the story, but they teamed up and they came out with the Gigolo Rap. And the Gigolo Rap, you know, Duffy used that bus pass. He would go, you know, from city to city with a couple boxes of records, giving them out, and then people start ordering them from him. You know, and that's how I met him. We came through Bakersfield, and I got on the next record. And the first three records that they recorded were all done. It's funny, too, because when I went to meet the rap group, I exited on Vine, and I got down past Capitol at the corner of Hollywood and Vine, and there in front of me is the Taft Building. And on the left-hand side, I said, that's ironic because I'm from Taft, and there's the Taft Building. So when I went to Duffy and met the group, the first three records, the Gigolo Rap, the Rappers Rap Group, and then Michael Hooks came with the third record, him and Duffy, called the West Coast Pop Lock. They were all recorded in the Taft Building at KSR Studios. It's just, anyway, that was the first three records done on the West Coast. And then Duffy found Rich Cason. Now, Rich Cason came
Rich
with
Cason.
A whole new sound. Yeah. I mean, you know, he did the Killer Groove, Magic Mike, 2001 Boogie. And it was his track that Captain Rap and them used on Bad Times, I Can't Stand It. And thanks for opening up with that song. Thank you, because that's a good song.
Yes.
I'm glad you opened up with that one, boy. That's a classic right there.
That just kind of got it started. You know, that's just you know.
Man, you started right, too. And I heard that. I said, okay. G. Lou knows what he's doing.
Yes, sir. Come on now.
So Duffy had went to Rich Cason, who was a multi-talented man. And he said, man, they got this song called Planet Rock. He said, I want something like that, some electro stuff. And Rich Cason had done a lot of stuff before he hooked up with Duffy. I mean, this dude was...
Yeah, that name was ringing. I was hearing that. Yeah, that name has been around. That name is you know, like you said, it was already ringing. Yeah.
Yeah, I think he wrote the bass line for Shaft. Isaac Hayes, he did the bass line for that. And that's how far back he goes. But anyway, Rich Cason said he listened to the record, Planet Rock. He goes, man, I got something for that. So he come out with 2001 Boogie. Ooh, that thing is still cold to this day. And then, you know, and then later on, Cletus, Captain Rap had left, where did he go? I mean, he went up to Denver or somewhere after the Gigolo Rap. And then Cletus Anderson had Saturn Records. He bought Saturn Records. He called Captain and said, hey, man, I want you to come back to L.A. and do a song. You know, I think the message had came out. And, you know, when the message came out, we all looked at each other like, Oh, dude, we can't come out talking about how cool we are and how bad we are no more. That shit is dead. We got to come out with some
street
rap. Back then,
that
we
changed the game.
We got a street rap. So MC Frosty came with the Radioactivity rap. Hey, and what's funny is that, you know, that right after that, our manager, EJ Jackson, he said, man, you guys can consult with me. He was a little mad or something. But he said, I'm not going to be the manager no more. So the group kind of split up. And then I told King MC, I said, well, you know what, King MC? I think you and I would be a good team. So we did our first record. We started our own label. And it was called Hits Records. And we came out with a song called Erotic City Rap. We took Prince's song, Erotic City.
Prince.
And, yeah, Prince. Mm-hmm. And, man, that song became like a top 10, 12. Every record store you went, it was up, you know, they had the top 20 on the wall. We was up there at number 5. Man, KGFJ radio was playing it. I was like, the whole 7 minutes, you know.
Right.
And
wow.
You know, back then when we made records, we were being shunned by the East Coast, you know, very early, right from the start, you know, because if it wasn't East Coast rap, it wasn't real rap, they were saying. You know, we had a different sound. We had a different vibe. We liked the R&B songs out here. You know, we bumping Rick James, Confunction,
right.
Cameo. You know,
right.
So our music was more than that. Zap and Roger. You know, we had, you know, everybody here had big speakers. You had to travel a long ways in your car to get somewhere. In New York, it was more tight. They were coming out with the little drums.
They're on
drum
the subways.
Patterns.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're on the subways with their Walkman on. We out here with Jeeps, you know, teenage woofers. So that's the kind of music we did. And people knew right away, oh, that's a West Coast song. You know, they were shunned. Except down south. Down south in Detroit, you know, Atlanta, you know, Memphis, they all love the West Coast sound. And they still do. When I go back there these days, they're always talking about West Coast, man. We love the West Coast sound. But anyway.
Yep.
You know, I
mean,
I want to
ask you this. Nah, you're good. I want to ask you this before we continue. I'm going to take a couple more callers. A lot of people have been waiting, but I want to ask you since you said you started a label then, I want to ask you kind of move forward and ask you about you acquiring Mercola Records and what's to come with that and just some more about that. But let me take a couple more callers before we continue.
Okay,
let me see. You mentioned the ATL. We got a caller in the ATL. Let me go to this caller. 678, you're live on the line. Hello.
Yes.
Nah.
Yeah, yay. Good evening.
Yes.
Good evening.
Who? This who?
DJ Houdini.
Yeah, Houdini.
DJ Houdini,
exactly,
what up?
Man.
What's happening?
Yeah,
how y'all...
that's Houdini. Man. Yeah, Houdini. Hey, let me tell you about Houdini. Houdini was... Houdini's about 6'4". When I was going to college at Taft College and doing my radio show, right, he would whenever we would go out and do live gigs, he was with me. He was my right-hand man. I mean, we were in the dorms together, you know what I'm saying? And whenever he would go, like, home on spring break or something, he would bring back new music that hadn't reached the West Coast yet. So he was always putting me up on new music. And Houdini was there from the beginning. And, man, I'm just I'm glad you called in, man. Anyway.
Shout out to Houdini.
What's back in who?
Yeah, me and Flash, we go back a long way. You know, I started jamming with Flash when I was a freshman in college. And my thing was mostly mixing and scratching. And DJ Flash, you know, he liked to rap, you know, so I was into the mix. And so we hit it off right away when we used to, back in the day, we used to do the house parties, a lot of the house parties. We did all the house parties in Bakersfield, Taft, and all those surrounding places. And I remember when Flash started his company, when he used to sell albums at the trunk of his car. And a lot of times group. You know, I had a little black LTD.
And, that's right. LTD.
The little towns and jam, you know, those were some good old days. And we used to, you know, and then we used to jam all the little clubs and everything. So, we got a lot of history.
A lot of history, man.
That's what's up. That's what's up.
Good to hear from you, Hoop.
Yeah, man. Thank you, Hoop. DJ Houdini, man. Thank you for calling in, brother.
That's Houdini,
appreciate that
man.
Love, homie.
My brother. Yeah. My brother.
Good people.
Okay. Much love, bro. Let me take a couple more callers. We got the Bay calling in 510-974. You're live on the line. Hello. 510.
Yeah, tired of waiting.
Yeah, man. I'm sorry, man. I'm sorry, bro. My bad, man. We got a lot going on, man. A lot of callers. What up, man?
What's going on with you?
Hello.
You should play a partner.
Hello,
like
sir.
Okay.
Rapper Forte. What up, man?
Hey.
I'm sorry,
man.
I'm sorry, Forte.
Yeah.
My bad, man. I have a man on hold. He said, my bad, Forte.
Damn.
No, it's
all
good.
To keep
I just wanted to tap in and give my love and thanks for DJ Flash coming to the Boogie Down Basement in the Bay Area and we putting the thing together, you know, West Coasting. Classic.
Yes.
That's the love I'm speaking of.
Thank you, man.
Yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so
most
much,
definitely.
Man, Rap Forte. Hey, I love this guy. This guy's the most solid, real person you ever going to meet in your life. My man.
That's
I love
cool.
Rap Forte.
You as well.
Thank you, sir.
You as well.
Yeah,
Flash.
Thank you for being a part of that special album. You know, we worked with Ronnie Hudson.
Wow.
We had Snoop.
Right.
We had E-40. We had Too Short, Rapping Forte, Shelly Shell.
Yep.
We flew Zap Troutman in, and he laid down
exactly.
The phone.
That's a lineup.
And put it together.
Yeah, that's a lineup.
Yeah.
Wow.
One love. I appreciate that.
It's so a blessing, Forte. Thank you. Thank you, Forte. Hey, Jeff Kwan said, what's up? Jeff Kwan sends his love, too. Jeff Kwan sends his love. Yes, sir.
Jeff, I send mine, too, as well. That's my guy.
For sure.
Okay.
All right.
Bless you, my brother. Thank you. All right.
Bless you.
Peace and love.
Okay.
Okay, Forte. Forte, I love you, man. Hey, be strong, man. I love you, man.
Okay.
Okay, then. All right, Forte.
Peace. Man, we are getting too blessed tonight, man. Hey, Flash, man. You the man, Flash. Yeah. We got to give you a round of applause, brother. You bringing them out tonight, man.
Hey, man, them are all good people right there, man. I mean, we all, you know, kind of start out together and work together. And one thing you learn when you work with people, no matter what they're saying on records or what they're doing, they're good people. You know, the record business is entertainment. It's entertainment. And, you know, I've always looked up to Rapper Forte ever since he came. I was living in L.A., man. His stuff came out. I'll Be Around. Come on. That's still one of my favorites.
Yeah.
I'll Be Around. Come on.
I'll Be Around. But I love, man. Yeah, Forte is the man. I go back to that Don't Fight the Feeling, though. Him and Short when he first first heard Forte. Oh, my God. Yes, sir, man.
Don't fight the feeling, man.
Don't Fight the Feeling. He killed that. So shout out to Forte.
Yeah. That was from Clear. That beat.
Yeah.
Clear. Hey,
yes, sir. Yes, sir. Yep.
And I like that one he did with Tupac. Only God Could Judge Me.
Oh,
yeah.
Only God Can Judge Me. Yes, sir. One of my
favorites
as well. Yes, sir.
Come on,
that's
man.
That's one of my favorites,
man. That's Rapper Forte, man.
Yes, sir.
That's Rapper Forte, man.
Rapper Forte
puts
respect on his name, man. Never talk down on the play.
Never talk down on a play. Okay. Yeah, that's right, man.
Yeah.
Shout out, Rapper Forte. Shout out, man. Shout out to your whole family, your daughter, your wife, everybody. Yeah,
yes,
man.
Wow.
Hold on, Flat. Let me go to another car. It's no telling who we got out here,
caller.
Man. You know, man.
Know who's
you just
out there.
Out. Yeah, let me see. Let me see. I took this call. 925, you're live on the air. Hello. Oh, sorry.
How you doing?
925. Evening, sir.
How you doing? How's everything?
Hello, how
great.
You doing?
Good. I had to call in.
Woo!
And I
know that voice.
I, I had to call in and just say much love to everybody. Much love to Flash.
Man.
Much love to Folte. Much love to Michael Hooks.
Okay.
Much love to you guys.
Okay. Man,
and,
come on.
Am I supposed to tell you who I am or what? What is that?
It's the captain.
I'm
going to
tell you. Listen.
Yeah.
Listen.
Now, come on now.
That's
we
Captain
know
Rap.
Who you are.
How
we
doing?
Played this
man,
song
it's
at
captain,
the beginning
man.
Of the show. That's Captain
yes,
Rap,
sir.
Homie. That's my
yeah,
dog.
So I had to call, I had to call in. I said, let me call in and let people know just about the process.
You see how we started the
DJ
show, right?
Flash.
You
and,
see how we started the show,
pardon
right?
me? Yeah,
I said you see
yeah.
how we started the show off. Okay, okay, all right.
Yeah,
ahead.
I've been I've been listening to the whole thing.
Okay, okay,
okay.
Bad times, baby. Yeah,
yes, sir.
Hey, man.
Wow.
Yeah.
Go ahead. Speak on it, Captain. Speak on it.
Go ahead. I will say, you know, I remember Flash was telling a story about, I guess, about Disco Daddy and I, how we hooked up. And
yeah,
it kind of went like I actually didn't know anything. I knew what a Carolina West was, but I had not. I didn't know about the battle that he was having with Ice-T. I didn't know anything about that. What I did is I went to a club one night that was involved. I guess it was the bringing of Magic Johnson to the Lakers, and it was a birthday party for him. And how I got into this thing. I walked in the club with a partner of mine, and then after Disco Daddy did his thing up on the podium and talked about Magic, and all of a sudden he comes down and he walks over to me and he says, are you the guy that I'm supposed to be meeting this weekend who's supposed to be real good? And I just said yes. I had no idea what he was talking about. I just said yes. I just figured he walked up to me. I said, yeah, I'm the one. Yeah,
dude,
I'm the one. I'm the one. Just let's talk. Long story short,
yeah.
I didn't know that he was having auditions at the house for a partner. Now, the crazy thing is I remember showing up. I only had like a couple of days to put some down on paper after he told me what he wanted. And I really, I knew I could do it, but I had never done it before. So when I put it down, I drove to his house. And there was probably that afternoon was probably 400 or 500 people in line waiting to get up to his spot to flow for him to pick them. So the line was so long, I just walked up to the front and I told his girl at the door, I said, he met me last night. He told me to come through. So he comes to the door. He says, oh, yeah. He pulls me in. He says, can you throw a little something at me? So I threw the line at him that I had written down that night before, and he told everybody else, he said, that's it. I'm going to shut it down. This is the guy right here. And that's how me and Disco Daddy met.
That's right.
Wow. And, so in my mind, it was more like it was supposed to be because it just happened like that. It wasn't – even when I went out that night before, I didn't go out to meet this cat. I didn't know who he was. As a DJ, I didn't know who he was. But I'll tell you one thing about it, a lot of people didn't know. And then I'm going to jump on the Flash thing because we met in a really crazy way when Flash first invited me and Disco Daddy down to Taft to do a show.
And I
tell people that was the first show that I had done out of L.A., and it was unbelievable. To this day, I always remember how unbelievable it was because we get there, and I'm thinking it's going to be maybe a few folks or something, you know. I mean, you know that cold thing because we was an L.A. group, and K-Day loved us, and KGLH, the stations, they loved us, we were doing. But I remember coming out, man, and I was in shock. I mean, it was like a building full of heads. That's all I remember seeing.
And
so I was blown away by
the
fact, man, I was blown away by that. I was literally blown away.
Yeah.
And I went, yeah, we really have to be ready for this. That was kind of the beginning of me realizing the impact of the hip hop, just, you know. And one thing I'll say about Disco Daddy, too, he was probably one of the smartest. He was a hook guy. He could come up with some hooks. He had ideas because his whole background was music. His mother was political. He was a musical thing. He was from the East Coast originally. A lot of people didn't know that. And so when I met him, it was like he had already maybe 10 years of experience on me, who just happened to get out the Air Force and happened to come to Long Beach and all of a sudden pop up at his door. It was something like that. I always could write as a kid, but I didn't plan on anything like that. I love music all my life. You know, I grew up on the R&B stuff and all that, but I had no focus to do that. It just kind of happened that way. But I'll say Flash was the first one to pull. He was so happy for us to come down and perform. I mean, it was crazy. Yeah. And that line was around the block, and it was crazy. And that was the beginning of a really long friendship, because you figure we've been friends now for, man, what is it? I think it was like 81. So yeah, we going. Yeah, this 81. Is what, 30 years?
40 years.
Way more than
40
that.
Years.
40
years.
About 40.
Yeah, 40 years. 40
yeah.
years. Yeah, 40
yeah,
years. 40. 40 years.
Man.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah,
there's a backstory to that too. Listen, let me tell you a quick backstory, and then I want you to touch on the on Bad Times, because I don't know if I got that story right. But check it out. So I called Duffy after the radio show, going back to that, and I said I could rap, you know. So that's how I met Duffy on the phone. He said, "Come on down," and so he said, "Yeah, I'll get a hold of Captain Rap. Just go, Daddy, and tell him you want to do them to come there for a performance." So I didn't have the date, but got the date, started promoting it, and my boy Sir T, you know, he was playing the record, and he was doing the cross promotion at his radio station. So we had Kern County on lock. And a couple weeks go by, and I still ain't heard from Disco Daddy and Captain Rap, right? And so I'm panicking now. It's 2 weeks before the show. So I'm at the college dorm, and I pick up, and this dude named Steve Anderson and this other brother. I said, "Look, man, you know I'm doing the show, but I ain't heard from them rappers yet. So you two are going to have to be Disco Daddy and Captain Rap, and I'm going to just pay you. So get up there. Hey, you just get up there, learn this song, and I want you to get up there and rap that motherfucking song. You know what I'm saying? Because it's too late to turn back now. I'm a couple thousand into this thing." So they said, "We got you, Flash. We got you." So they're down there in the college dorm rehearsing every day. Gigolo, gigolo. You know what I mean? I'm Captain Rap. Hey. So we had to do what we had to do, right? All of a sudden, it was about a week before the show, the phone rings. I'm at home. I answer the phone. He said, "DJ Flash." I said, "Yes." He said, "This is Captain Rap." "Man, I'm telling you, I about passed out." I went, "Captain Rap?" "Man, I was a fan, first of all. And, you know, we're like brothers now." But I said, "Man, I'm doing this show like next Saturday, man. Can you get down here? Rub up, up." And he said, "Yeah." And back then, rent, you could pay rent. My rent on a 3-bedroom house was like $230 a month, okay? So I don't know if I should say this. Oh, Captain might get mad. But look, I said, "Look, man, I can give you like $100, and I can come pick you up, take care of your motel, the whole nine. You just come rap that one song."
Right.
He hesitated. He said, $100? But that was a half a month rent. He said, "Okay, man, I'm going to do it." I said, I'm playing this shit on the radio, you know, so I got a radio station. So that helped, you know what I mean?
But he came down,
and the event was so successful. Like he said, the two guys that I had to be Disco Daddy and Captain Rap, the two guys at college, I told, "Okay, you guys just take money at the door, right?" Man, I left. I went and got Disco Daddy. I mean, Captain Rap. They come down there. Hey, and these guys, when I get back to the club, the event, these guys had garbage bags full of money because we had no cash register. They're just taking money. We didn't think it was going to be that successful.
Wow.
We thought maybe 200 or 300 would come. It was more like 1,500 people.
It was unbelievable.
500 capacity building with 1,500 people on the parking lot, parking around the corner. Everything. So they had garbage bags full of money. I had to be escorted out, put that shit in my trunk, $5 and $10 bill, 20, all that, right? And I go to the motel with this girl and I count the money. I couldn't believe all that money, man. So next morning, I said, "Hey, man, I told you I was going to give you $100. Here's $500. I gave him that. He said, "Damn, okay, Flash," and we've been friends ever since.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Yep.
So that's always that's the good memory of my first performance,
man,
out of L.A. I tell Flash the first performance we did that was big was when they blocked off the Crenshaw Boulevard area by VIP Records, and it was, I don't know how many people was out there. It had to be, off the top of my head, it was thousands of people out there, and we performed with the Sugar Hill Gang, and that was like off the hook right there. So, you know, that kind of, you know, like I said, I guess for me, I wasn't focusing on the music so much. I just happened to be in, I guess, magic places at certain times. And I tell people, you know, back in the day, I used to go hang out early on, Lonzo, Dre's house, and I knew Snoop ever since he was a youngster. I mean, I think I met Snoop when he was probably like 7 or something. Just a lot of stuff.
Because you come from Long Beach. Yeah, you're from Long Beach.
Exactly. I'm from Long Beach. Yeah. My parents, my mom had moved there, and when I got out of the military, that was the place I went. And back then, my first job when I got out of the Air Force, I got a job working with the Long Beach Fire Department. So I had a good job. And so that stuff, that's why it wasn't that important to me, because I was a young brother that, 24 years old with a really good job.
And rap just wasn't like that pop at that time. A lot of money wasn't being made from rap at that time.
No. You couldn't even imagine it. And, you know, to be honest with you, the game was so crazy, because then you start realizing, I got into a disagreement one time with a guy over some money. I could tell you some stories. Even I had a tour when I went to the East Coast, New York. Well, I heard Flash talk about some about the East Coast cats didn't like the West Coast cats, right?
Right.
When I went to the East Coast, they showed me none but love on the East Coast. And when I said it, I maybe it was because of what I was doing. And this was when I did Bad Times. When I did Bad Times, I mean, man, I was in New York.
That was undeniable.
Probably for, man, I was in New York probably for four or five days, and I was doing two shows a night, and they were paying me well. It was unbelievable. I couldn't believe that you could go and make that kind of money on a rap song. I really couldn't. And that's when I was able to meet Grant, you know, Melly Mel, and the brother from Soul Sonic Force, and it was just a lot of them New York groups who want to come out.
They want to come out
and look at the East Coast cat, the West Coast cat, and wonder, why do they like this cat? But it was a beautiful experience. And even I'll tell you the first place that blew me away. I didn't know anything about Detroit, Flint, Michigan. If ever I say to somebody, Flint, Michigan was the one that set it off for me, because they love the songs. But when Bad Times came out, man, I mean, I was getting calls from Michigan to do stuff. Almost, I mean, I probably could have got rich just going to Michigan. It was crazy.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, the funny thing, the West Coast, you know, our stuff was shunned on the East Coast. Like I said, Detroit, Chicago.
But everywhere else, it was popping.
South. It was popping. But Bad Times, I'll tell you something. When Bad Times and Egypt, look, when Egypt and Bad Times came out, I think they came out a few months apart from each other. Those two songs just like, you know, kicked the door down.
Yeah.
Like, hey, this is the West Coast, baby. We're coming at you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bad Times and Egypt. That was the two right there, man.
Yep. Yep.
They kicked the doors down.
Egypt set it off, too. Hey, Captain Rap, let me ask you this.
Yep.
Like you said,
sir.
You didn't take rap that serious. And even though your song
did
its thing and blew up and you kind of fell back, even Flash, as a whole, the whole label, everybody kind of fell back. How did you guys feel, or I don't know for what reasons, but, okay, now things move forward and rap is starting to pop, even on the West Coast where you got people like Tracy and other people who you guys kind of started with or seen early take off. You know, do you regret how did you feel about that? And being that you guys were there first, you could have maybe took it further or what? Or you didn't
We should have stayed in the game. We should have stayed in the game.
Okay.
Right.
I'm telling you, we should have stayed in the game.
So I would say this was my reasoning, right? So when Cletus reached out to me to come back from Denver to do the Bad Times cut, I basically said to him in my head, I'd moved to Colorado just to kick it in Colorado. I wasn't going to come back to Cali. But I came back after I talked to him. I said, well, look, there's a certain amount of money I'm going to need to do this. And so he gave it to me. So I came back. I sat down at my mother's kitchen in Long Beach, and I wrote the song probably in about a week. I think I took about a week to write it. And then I had it pretty much in my head. Right at the time when I was finishing it up, I kept getting a call from Motown. My mother said, somebody from Motown keeps calling you. So when I told myself to go, it was a guy, rest in peace, his name was Jay Lasker. And Jay, I didn't know it at the time. I didn't know it because I wasn't, again, remember, here's a young brother who's working at the fire department. I'm making enough money to do whatever I want to. I had a really nice house down by the ocean, and I had my car, and I'm living a life that most young cats couldn't live, right? I want to say the only other person I knew, I want to say probably two other people that was living that way was Lonzo was living like that. And so was Ice-T, because I remember Ice-T was doing pretty well too. And we would run across each other every so often. I would even go to the radio spot when he was running that. So, you know, certain people I would run into every so often. But Jay called me and he said, look, I want to sign you to Motown. Now, when he said that to me, I'm looking at this cat going, damn, he didn't tell me who he was. I'm sitting in the office. I was sitting in the office probably 2 hours. But that just shows you how naive you can be, because here's my reason. He said Rick James wanted to redo Give It to Me Baby, the Gigolo song we did. He wanted me and Disco Daddy to do it, right?
Yeah.
Now, the song was already doing well, but if we would have let Rick do that, it would have really blew the hell up, right? All he wanted to do was come in and produce it, and for us to do what we did. The problem was, Disco Daddy didn't tell me until we got to the meeting that he had signed with this brother in L.A. who owned a little record store named Joey Jefferson. I don't know if anybody knows that name. Okay?
Yeah.
All I will say is this. He was the biggest crook on the planet. So I wasn't – he tried to get me to sign, and I told him no. I said, I would never sign with you. There was nothing he could do for me. And Disco Daddy signed with him. And so after he signed with him and he told me that, because of my loyalty to him, because most people wouldn't have done what I did. And you know what I'm about to say? Most people would have said, Jay, sign me. Don't worry about him. He's done. Do that. But I didn't do that. I just went on. I said, since he signed already, Jay had told him, you can't sign because you signed with this other cat. I was still free. I could have gone wherever I wanted to go. And they really wanted to work with me. He even told me when I left, take my number, call me anytime. I never called him again. I was in that meeting for 2 hours. I never called him again. And so for me, I think in the long short of it, I would say I loved the music game. I loved what I learned out of it. To me, the music business showed me this. Everything in the world that we deal with where there's money involved, I hate to say it, but I believe it's crooked. Everything is crooked when it's big money. And if you're not prepared for that, I'm talking lending, banking, music, you name it, it's crooked. Okay, so you have to go into it knowing that somebody's going to try to talk you out of something that they don't want. They want more of what you're going to, especially the non-creative folks, the ones that aren't creative, right? And so I'll say this, and Flash knows this. Like, let me see, about 5 years ago. You ever heard of a young it's a young lady from Oakland named Kaylani. You heard of Kaylani?
Yes.
So I did Kaylani's first 9 songs. That was the last project that I worked on. Somebody brought her to me, and I took her to Sacramento, and I worked on Kaylani with my boy Derek Allen. They call him DOA. And and since then, Kaylani's been signed to Atlantic and doing her thing. I actually think she should be bigger than she is, but yeah, she signed. And then a lot of people don't know, if you think about the brother, rest in peace, one of my closest friends, comedian Ricky Harris. Ricky died in
From Long Beach.
2000. Yeah, Ricky was my boy. Now, I took Ricky to meet Robin Harris. I took Ricky to do that. Ricky would tell jokes all the time at school, and I stopped him one day. I said, man, you tell all these jokes all the time. I said, let me take you somewhere where you're going to make some money. So he says, okay. And about a week later, he came back, and he said, okay, I'm ready. And I took him. I said, Robin, this is Ricky. Ricky, this is Robin. And that was the beginning of that. So I've always kind of – I never mind had a problem with helping folks and showing folks how to get through stuff. Ricky would even call me, even during the times he was signed with Russell Simmons and all different things about how to make sure I got the right situation. You know, I'm really good with the contracts. Even to this day, I try to go over the contracts with folks and help them out. Even at this point in my life, man, I still – I listen to a lot of music. I do feel kind of like Flash feels that there's a lot of things that are kind of missing in the music now. I think I really think that for I'd say the biggest disappointment for me with hip-hop is, to me, in my mind now, if you're going to be a big hip-hop artist, it's almost like putting a target on your back, because more than likely you might get killed. That's something that I just can't fathom. I can't fathom that. I can't fathom it, right?
Yeah.
Because what the whole purpose for us to do the music is because we loved it and we want to be successful. And now when you're successful, all of a sudden somebody's saying, well, he's taking my spot or something along that line, and you might not make it. So to this day, I get people to come to me to this day and go, look, I know you can help me. And as soon as they say rap, I go, I can't help you. Because in my mind, I'm setting somebody up to get their life taken. You look at all the rappers that have been dope rappers that are dead now. And even if you Google how many rappers have died in the past year, you'll see a load of them.
Yeah.
And that's the part where I don't understand how we talk about unity and getting together and helping each other. But, man, you know what I'm saying? So that's my reason. I told Flash, I said I'd rather go into – do some real estate stuff and do something I can do with my own mind and money and not have to worry about other involvement because, you know. But I'll say this too. I've loved every minute of it. I love the fact that I was able to meet. I've met so many people along the line of doing this thing. I mean, my experience with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis was unbelievable. My experience with Leon Haywood was unbelievable. My experience with Leon Silvers and – I mean, I can go on and on. Lakeside, all the people that I've met along the way, doing what I was doing. But again, the difference with me is there was people that was fighting to get it, and I wasn't fighting to get it. I just thought it was cool. Yeah.
You know, Dre said it best. Music is a young man's game. Remember?
Yeah.
He said that. Music is a young man's game. Let you guys take a run with it.
Now I will say this. So, I'm sitting at my house. One day, and Dre calls me on the phone. He goes, what you doing, Cap? And I say, man, I'm just chilling right now. What's up? He said, come to the studio and listen to the album I'm working on. And I said, okay. So I go to the studio, and everybody's there. You know, Cube's there, Ren is there, Easy's there, everybody there. And he started playing the songs for me, right? Mm-hmm. And I said to myself, it's unbelievable how – at that time, you figured Dre was probably 17, 18, right? Yeah. How he could do what he was doing. And you talking about somebody with an ear. I mean, I just don't know how anybody could be that good that young. He had it, man. The dude was bad. You see what I'm saying? And so, I was just happy to be in the presence of the brother because he was talented. But I tell you who else was talented that – I'm not saying a lot of people would miss him, but because Dre and him were together a lot, I remember Dre told me to come to the house one day, his mom's house, and then what's his name was there too. Why am I forgetting his name?
Yellow.
Dre's the other producer.
Jinx.
Jinx. Oh my God.
Jinx.
Oh yeah.
Jinx is cold.
I think he's underrated.
Jinx played.
For sure.
Jinx was the first person to play. He called me. He said, Cap, check this out. So Dre's in one room, Jinx in the other room, and he calls me and he said, listen to this. I had never heard anybody put together a Johnny Guitar Watson kind of vibe on a hip-hop track. Ooh. And at that point, I said, this dude is sick with it. This dude is sick. It was off the hook. And Jinx wanted to work with me. He wanted to produce me. Jinx did.
Yeah.
Me and Dre would sit up in at Lonzo's spot and do some stuff at times. But, you know, back then, too, I was really busy because I was working and then doing music. And we, and Disco Dad and I, we were at the clubs. We were in the L.A. clubs almost every weekend, usually Thursday, Friday, Saturday. And then we were toured with the Soul Train folks. And it was ridiculous, man. I mean, it was one of those things you wake up and you go, I used to wake up in place and go, how did I get into this? I used to say that. How did I just get in? I just walked into that, you know. And then Al Jarreau's wife, Al Jarreau had a wife, Susan, and Susan, bless her soul, Susan met me one day and said, you know, you don't have a manager. And I said, no. She said, well, I tell you what, I'll manage you. I'll help you. So she was the one kind of guiding me through a lot of situations too, because, man, I'm going to tell you, I would get people to fly me places, and then when we get there, because I didn't really know what to expect, they might send me some money before I got there, but then once we got there, say they said, well, you know, I'll give you $2,500, I'll send you $1,000, I'll give you $15 when you get here. When you got there, they want to give you the money after you went on, right? But that was a mistake, because if after you went on, you didn't get the money, you wasn't getting paid, because that person going to be gone, you couldn't find them. So Susan would always set it up for me and make sure I got what I needed. It was unbelievable. So that's why I said the learning process. But I had, I mean, even, what is it, J.B. Stone over at the radio station he was at, they were trying to come in as far as partners and management and all that. It was everywhere we went, somebody was either trying to be a part of it or grab us in some kind of way, because they could see that something was different. And I would say, seriously, for two guys from the West Coast, Disco Daddy, I have to say it, Disco Daddy was probably one of the most underrated rappers, because this dude had it all. He had it all, but he also had a musical background and MCing background and just radio. I mean, he went to that school in L.A. I mean, there was a lot of stuff that he knew that I had no idea about. I didn't even know he knew it until all of a sudden he started bringing it out.
Yeah.
But I used to tell him the thing that he did. He used to tell me. He said, Cap, some of the decisions I could make were good, but he said, you always seem to make the better decision because you understood maybe the business side more. And that was just because I realized that the way it seemed to me is if you could make $1 million and somebody all of a sudden when $1 million came and somebody was going to give you $100,000, what happened to the 900, right?
Yeah,
and that's the way the game was coming out. That's why.
Let me say this. You know what the thing was, G. Lou and Queen Jean. Back then, none of us ever dreamed on being a record. We never had a dream of being on a record. This new genre of music came about, and when we started at the top. Okay, we made a record. We're doing shows, you know, and we had E.J. Jackson in our camp. We're riding in limos. You know what I'm saying? So it's kind of like we started at the top, and there was no place else to go after that, right? And then all these other groups started coming in. Like, we started 81. Captain Rap started 81. At 82, 83. About 84 is when, if I'm correct. Now, somebody correct me. That's when the Wrecking Crew, Uncle Jam's Army, Egyptian Lover, L.A. Dream Team, all them cats started coming in around 84, 85. And by then, now, I'm going to put it out there like this. By then, I was tired, okay? We had been doing this stuff for 4 or 5 years. We was the only ones doing it, not 5 years, but 81, 82, 83, at least to 84. That's when Don McMillan got in the game with McCullough Records, and Duffy went to Don. I was with Duffy and Jerry Hooks. When we went in, they created record labels. There was a record label place. He went in to pick some record labels up for our record. He had pre-orders of thousands of records, but he didn't have no money. He was getting stuff pressed over at Bill Smith Pressing in El Segundo, the record plant. Bill Smith couldn't press out, you know, 10,000 records because that's money out of his pay. He had to pay his employees. He had overhead. So you had to pay COD, basically. And now 50 records, he'll give you 50 on credit. But we go in, and I told Duffy right away. I said, Duffy, I'm a DJ. I'm a promoter. You know what I'm saying? I know everything about, but I want to learn the record business. Everything you know, I want to learn. So he took me up under his wing, and we went in. He had all these orders that he couldn't fill, right? And right next to the record label place was this place called McCullough Records. Now, Don McMillan, he was in there. He was making a living off of the Spanish 45s, those Spanish disco records, right? That's what his bread and butter was. And he had all Spanish guys, you know, working in his plant. He had about 20 records damping machines, right? So anyway, so we in there, and then Duffy, Don McMillan came out, and Duffy struck up a conversation with him. He said, look, I'm Duffy Hooks, blah, blah, blah. I've got all these pre-orders for records of this new genre called rap. He goes, I can't fill these. I don't have the money. So we went in his office. We sit down, and him and Duffy talk, and I'm watching these two guys. I'm thinking to myself, wow, this is how big deals are made. Let me just be a fly on the wall. So the big Don McMillan, he leaned back, smoking his big cigar in his big leather chair, and Duffy's explaining, you know, I got all these pre-orders from all these record distributors over the country, but I can't fill them. I don't have the money. And Don McMillan said, let me see that list. He took that list, right? I remember the first call he made was to, what was it called? CD something Hall in the Bay Area.
Yeah, I know what you're talking
City Hall.
I know
City
the name
Hall.
Of it.
City Hall.
City Hall.
There you go.
And Don
Hall.
Had done business with him before. He said, so he called him up. Yeah, this guy named Duffy Hooks is in here. He's got these pre-orders, you know. You want like 300, 400 records. He said, yeah. No, I talked to Duffy. Yeah, that's right. So he hung up the phone. He made a couple more calls, right? Don, he called me. He made about 3 or 4 phone calls, and they all confirmed what Duffy, yeah, we want 500 records. Yeah, we want this and that. Don McMillan, he hung the phone up. He looked over at the guys in there working at his plant. I'm sure he was thinking, man, I got to meet payroll. He said, these guys, this guy's got, you know, 15, 20,000 records pre-ordered. So he cut a deal right there. He said, I'll tell you what, Duffy, I will manufacture the records. I will ship them out. I will do the accounting. I'll collect the money, and then I'll give you a check. And back then, it was $1 to press the records, okay? And then we usually sold them for $2, you know, wholesale. So everybody's making $1. And then the record outlets were, you know, bumping it up to, you know, $2.99, $3.99. Everybody's making $1 is what it basically come down to, you know. And the label owner. And anyway, so they struck a deal right there. And so Don McMillan told Duffy, said, bring me all the rappers you can. And so it took a couple years, but the word got out. You could take your records to McCullough. So, man, all these dudes started coming to McCullough. Unknown DJ, Lonzo, you know what I'm saying?
Everybody
came to McCullough. And, man, he's making money, right? Because rap is, like, the biggest thing. So Don McMillan didn't even know what rap music was till Duffy Hooks walked in there. And so the rest is history. Don McMillan put out, I don't know, 500 or 600.
And you know who was sitting out in front of the building when you would walk up with your stuff to say he would help you with your paperwork and everything? Who was it?
Jerry Heller.
Hey, yeah,
that's right.
He came in later. He came in later, and he was right there.
Yeah,
signed him up. Hey, but
that's right.
You know, that's how McCullough got going, and you know, Duffy Hooks, he gets his props, but he don't get his real props because there was no distribution system for rap at that time. People didn't know what to do with rap. Distributors, record stores. At first, we didn't get in the warehouse or the Tower Records, but eventually, we got into the warehouse. Once you hit warehouse, they had 500 record stores nationwide. Then you get into Tower Records, you know, there's another 200 or 300 record stores. That was big time. Oh, we finally made it. You know, they used to put them on the floor. You walk down where the bins are, seen a bunch of records on the floor. That's where your records would be. And then record stores didn't even have a rap category in the bin. You go flipping through the bins, there was no rap category. It took a couple years for them to, okay, we got our own bin over here. Because there just wasn't that many rap records being made at the time. But, you know, look, I'll say this. Yeah, in 2017, McCullough Records is such a landmark. I did not want to see that die with Don McMillan, so I got a hold of him. I went up to his Palos Verdes house. Cecil B. DeMille used to live in that house. Beautiful home. And, you know, $3-4 million home. And I went, Don, look, he said, what you going to do with the label? I said, I don't really know. I just want to make sure that I got the label so that if I can, you know, I don't know what I'm going to do with the label. I'm going to tell you the truth. You know, I'm just a simple man. The label, I got the logo, I got all the records. At first, everybody owned their own records.
When you get the McCullough, you get all of that catalog as well, right? The past,
I get
the catalog.
Catalog,
or how does that work?
Well, at first, like Lonzo, Egyptian Love, everybody, us rappers, we all owned our own label. So he was just manufacturing, distributing, right? But
right.
He wised up when all these rappers started coming later, and he signed them to McCullough. So that's the stuff I got. I don't have none of the early stuff. You know, Dream Team.
Okay.
All the guys who built McCullough, the earliest guys, they all own their own stuff. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's other stuff I could deal with. But, you know, dealing with some of these rappers sometimes, I'm going to tell you. Look, man, dealing with some of these rappers can be bad for your health. Let me put it like that. So, you know,
right.
Once they get a record out, they expect limousines. They expect all this. I remember Cletus Anderson
right.
said, this rapper called. He put a record out. Rapper called. And I talked to the girl there, and she said, oh, your record. He said, how the record doing? Oh, it's doing real good. We shipped 5,000 records. 5,000 records? Man, he ran down. He jammed up Cletus and started taking some equipment out of his place and stuff. Man, you owe me, you owe me. He said,
wow.
Look, man, you don't know the – he said, we shipped 5,000 records. That don't mean we sold 5,000 because those records were
right.
shipped on a 60 or 90-day consignment. We front the records. And then if they sell them, we'll get paid. If not, and the dude's going on and on and with my money. And so Cletus said, look, man, I'm going to give you 500 records, and you go out there and sell them yourself.
Right.
He didn't sell one record. He didn't sell one record.
Right.
He probably still got them 500 records. But look,
right,
man,
right.
Look, we I'll say this. I know it's almost time to wrap it up. But we are interested in doing old school shows. I'm interested. I need help. I need merchandising. Somebody does merchandising or marketing out there, like jackets and T-shirts. If they're into that, get a hold of me. I can license the McCullough logo. We can make something happen. We're trying to get on some old school shows. We need a manager. Nobody know how to get a hold of us. But, you know, we got Captain Rap. We got Ronnie Hudson. We got the Rapper's Rap. You know what I'm saying? MC Fonky, all of us.
Right.
We love to get out and perform in front of our fans. But we haven't really performed in years. We've done a few shows here and there. But if anybody knows anybody that book groups for old school shows to be in the mix, we have a great show.
Tell them your catalog. Tell them your information where they can get at you at,
yeah.
Emails or however you would like
you
people to contact you.
You can get me at djflash808@gmail.com. djflash808@gmail.com. Or you can call me on my phone. Hey, 530-693-7102. 530-693-7102. Call me. Let's talk. Look, we come from a time where we had to scrape, scrimp, try to get everything together. You know, so we ain't going to kill you. We ain't going to break you. But we like to get out
right.
there and entertain the fans and, you know, get something going. I don't care if it's Europe, L.A., San Francisco, wherever, man. Hey. We're easy to get along with, easy to work with, and we love the music. We just love it, man.
So. And Flash knows that I'm a little easy with it. So I'll just say, if anybody wants to contact me, Captain Rap, you can reach me at area code 925-200-1642. My email is
yes.
emeraldimusic@aol.com. So it's emeraldimusic@aol.com. EmeraldeyeMusic at AOL or even Gmail. Either way, it'll get to me. But it's been a pleasure. I really appreciate calling in and talking.
Thank you, sir.
Without
Thank
a doubt.
Thank you, Captain. Thank you, buddy. Thank you, sir.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Captain. All right.
I appreciate you, man. Yeah. Much love, Rap. And we'll go ahead and wrap it up. So, Flash. Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yes.
We'll go ahead and wrap it up, Flash. There's so much more I think we got to get. We may have to do this again or part two. I don't know whenever you're available.
Yeah, we can do part two.
We didn't
just
even
let me
touch
know
the
whenever
surface,
you...
man.
Nah, when
okay.
we, but
okay.
you know, I appreciate all the callers. Thank Rapid Forte. Thank Kyle.
Tell Forte to call me. I want to know where he at.
Okay. You heard that, Forte.
Tell him to call me.
Listening.
Yeah.
Okay, you got that
I know
number.
He's still listening. It's all good.
Queen Jean? Is Queen Jean still with us?
Queen Jean is still there.
She got dropped. She just texted me. No, she got dropped somehow, but she's listening, but she's not on the line. But
Queen Jean, I love you. I'm sorry I didn't get to talk to you. And G-Lou, let's do part two, man, whenever, because there's a lot. And the book coming out, right? If there's any people that work with
that
book
too.
Publishers. You know,
I have a publisher, actually. I have a publisher for you right now, so
we
got to make that. Yeah,
we old
yes,
school.
Sir.
We need
okay.
help.
We'll make it happen.
Okay, man. We got
all right,
you.
G-Lou.
Thank you, G-Lou.
You guys be good, man.
All
right, bro.
All right. Love y'all, man. We'll
all
wrap it up,
love
and
too,
I'll get
bro.
At you later on, Flash. And thank you again, Rap, and everybody else who tuned in all tonight. Right. Great show. Legendary show. Once again, thank you, DJ Flash, and all the founders, Mr. Hooks, who called in, Tweet, Cadillac, so many people.
Yes.
Thank you, everybody. We'll do it again soon. We love y'all. We out of here. Peace.
All right.
Good night.
Peace.